Okay, we're just going to wait for a moment. We'd like to give everyone an extra minute to join, minute grace period. Just to make sure that all my settings, we've been hijacked a couple times. So, if you tell me your name, Inish, I'd be happy to unmute you. If not, unfortunately, I cannot. Unless you have to show me your face. Okay, well, unfortunately, we've had a lot of people who have been trying to take over. And Kyle, I do not know who you are. So. Okay. Okay. Who's waving to me? Who's that?
It's David Lentz. How are you, mate?
Oh, hi, David. How are you? I didn't notice you in the corner. Unfortunately, we've had a lot of people hijacking the forum and putting up obscene pictures, so just a little bit hesitant. How are you? How's everyone in here as well?
Thank God. Thank God. I think we had a lucked out that we were locked in earlier than everybody else in some ways. It actually turned out to be in some ways a blessing, I think. So, but
there are quite a few current Gush students online now. So meet David Len from 1983.
All right.
So, good to see you, David. How's Diane? Everyone right. Well?
Thank God.
Okay, great. Let me just get the share out. Okay, it looks like we have a pretty controlled group. We know who's here, people that belong. Okay. So we're trying to highlight different makos and how they dovetail with some of the challenges we're going through. Again, makos are not just penal and not just punitive for the Egyptians. but they deliver a whole range of messages, moral messages, theological messages, societal messages, cultural messages. We have to assume that some of what the Egyptians and the Jews and the international audience were experiencing in Mitzrayim, we're learning some of those lessons ourselves. So it's a learning opportunity for us through the prism of the Makos. We're not being punished in the way the Egyptians were punished. Maybe some penal elements of this is hard to tell. We don't like to be too specific and too direct, and this is happening because of this, but there are some trends that we're able to detect. Now, interestingly enough, the experience of Kenan, and again, I use the word experience because they're so multi-leveled, is described very, very briefly. There's no warning, at least the way the Torah describes it. The warning isn't recorded. Hashem tells Moshe, tell Aaron. Again, Chazal feel that Moshe would be inappropriate to be involved with the dirt. He was saved by the dirt. He hid the Egyptian body. There are other reasons. But right away, V'haya l'chinim b'chol eretz Mitzrayim, Aaron expedites, hits the earth, the kinam, not kinim, kinam, which is a switch of tense, ba'adam uv'habema, kol afar eretz ha'yakinim b'chol eretz Mitzrayim, v'yaser ken achartimim b'latihim. So let's discuss four issues of potential overlap between Kenim or Kenam and what we're experiencing. Probably the most overwhelming is as follows. The two experiences immediately after Kenim, namely Arov and Dever, the Torah is very clear that the Jews were spared. So I'm skipping ahead to tomorrow night's V'samti Fidus Bein Ami Uvein Amecha. I'm going to differentiate between the Jews and the Egyptians. There'll be no loss of cattle for the Jews. And then Hashem promises, and he delivers. The next day they wake up, and the Jewish people don't lose any cattle. Similarly with Arov, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very clear. And we're going to, I'm sorry, Arov is before Dever. So Arov, I'll separate, then comes Dever, I apologize. It's going to be a total separation. Kenan is a little bit different. In fact, if I can share the screen, let me see if I can find the actual psukim, because you'll be shocked to see. Okay, take a look at these psukim. Let me see if I can get it out to you very, very quickly. It'll just take a second. Apologize, margin here. Okay, here we go. Perfect. Take a look at this pasuk. I'm going to raise it on my screen now. Take a look at the description of Kenan. I have to make sure I do it the right way and don't let people doodle with the screen. Let me make sure that I'm the only one, okay, I'm the only one that can annotate. If you take a look at the Kenan, it's very clear, V'haya l'kenim b'chol eretz Mitzrayim. V'yach ha'sefar eretz v'tiyah kenam ba'adam, Adam is universal, ba'behima, animals, kol afar eretz ha'yah kenim b'chol eretz Mitzrayim, as opposed to the split between Goshen and the other areas. The Chartumim tried to reproduce it. They couldn't. Vatiakinim Badam, universal Jew, Egyptian, Uvabhima. Namely, it's comprehensive. Jews, Egyptians, animals, B'chol Eretz Mitzrayim, Goshen, not Goshen. And the contrast with Arov and Dever is striking, because Arov and Dever, it's almost as if there's a superfluous attempt to stress the Jews were spared. The answer is, and this is all based on Mamari Chazal and Midrashim, that everyone had Kenim by the time the Makkah ended. The difference is that the animals and the slaves had Kenim before the Makkah began, because they were slaves, and their hygiene was deplorable, and they couldn't shower, and they were working in the dust, and they didn't wear clothing because slaves in ancient Egypt or ancient civilization wear clothing. That's why the Jews wanted clothing so much, because they weren't allowed to walk around in clothing. Their hygiene was abhorrent. So before the Makkah of Kenan begins, who has lice and smell and disgusting hygiene? Animals and slaves. And now HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends those same hygienic deficiencies to the Egyptians, so that by the time, and I'll highlight the pasuk again, by the time the Makkah has concluded, now Vatihi, after the Makkah, Hakinam Ba'adam Ba'beima Kol Afar Tzkinim B'chol, now everyone is on an equal playing field. Slaves, animals, and Egyptians. which means that Kinyan wasn't just a punishment, it was a reordering of social hierarchies. Because we're trying to break down the Egyptian hubris and liberate the Jewish imagination and reorder the social hierarchies where you've been a slave for 200 years, you've been spat upon and raped and beaten and persecuted, Egyptians walking around a nice fragrance and nice smell. And the smell is really important because the smell has been building, has been mounting, because the Nile is reeking after Dam, and now the banks of the Nile are reeking after Tzfardea, Bativash Aretz. And now the Egyptian bodies are reeking, and they're walking a mile in the shoes of Egyptian slave, the Jewish slaves. So they're brought down a few pegs. Jewish people are now treated as equals, or they feel as equals. And keep in mind that this is, of course, alongside the fact that at Kinyan, Chazal say, the slavery essentially halted. They were still indebted. They were still underlings. They were still legally discriminated against. But the heavy workload, because the Jews' primary workload was in construction, but even Aramis and Al-Sabaro. And Kinyan, according to Chazal, was really a double shot. It wasn't just hygiene and lice and dirt that we associate with people without good, proper hygiene. There's also, Chazal said, every time you took a mound of dirt out of the ground, it got filled immediately by rodents and mice and rabbits and snakes and snails and a whole army, and I'll talk about the armies later, a whole army of rodents and chipmunks and hedgehogs. So which two industries grind to a halt? Number one, the agricultural industry. We'll talk about that some other time, but also the construction industry. So at this point, if you can't dig holes, you can't build foundations. Can't build foundations, then you can't maintain construction. So the Jews are essentially laid off in a good way, and the social hierarchies are being reordered. And the Egyptians are embarrassed. There's a lot of embarrassment in Chazal's language. The Chartumim, again, I'll highlight the page of the Chartumim, are fleeing from Moshe. They couldn't. Why couldn't they? So some say they just couldn't, but some say that they just couldn't stand it. They smelled the high heaven. The body odor was terrible, embarrassed to stand there. Even though they tried, I'd rather go to my room and take a shower or hide. So there's a lot of leveling between Egyptian and Israeli slave, Jewish slave, and there's a lot of attention paid to hygiene. So that's the first marker, I think, that tips us off to the corona situation. We're thinking a lot about hygiene. We're thinking a lot about the human body. We're reminding ourselves about the glory of the human body, not just the glory of the human soul. And Hashem carefully crafted the human body with a delicate balance, which obviously has been upended, and we're suffering the consequences of that disruption. We're washing our hands a lot, and hopefully when we wash our hands and we keep our bodies well-kept, it's not just to stave off possible pandemic consequences. It's also because we realize that Hashem wants our bodies are our palaces, wants our bodies to be kept clean, basically. Obviously, we're taking extra measures of being more precautious, but this is a good reminder of that Judaism doesn't accept the body-soul division. You can take a look at where the shir is, but I gave a shir from Mizrahi last week. It's probably on their site somewhere about body and soul and the fact that we don't buy into those divisions. And we care for our bodies under normal circumstances. We care for our bodies even more so when our bodies could be transmitters of, or receivers of germs. And in general, the Jews weren't able to, and this HaKadosh Baruch Hu reminding the Egyptians, and by extension, the Jews, of hygiene and its role in society. So that's one thing. The second thing I thought about, is what I mentioned before. I talked about this morning. Every day I give a 2-minute video message. It's on my Twitter, it's on Facebook, and please, if you want to look at them, join either Twitter or Facebook. It's with Moshe Tarragon. I talked about the fact that I'm very worried about the domino effect of this virus. Right now, our primary preoccupation is the medical issue, medical treatment, so vaccinations, immunizations, not transmitting the disease. But this is real, and this is devastating, and this is going to be evidently enduring in certain countries. It's going to start to spill over. We could be finding ourselves in a few weeks nostalgic about the days of March where the only issue we had on our hands was a health issue. You can't shut down economies. The economy is going to take a big hit. We're talking to some boys in South Africa. You can appreciate that very, very deeply. Once the economy and the health situation exacerbates, there'll be a lot of social unrest, a lot of violence. Unfortunately, the Jewish communities in the United States, typical Haredi communities in France, in England, in Belgium, they're very, very hard hit, very, very disproportionate to the overall population. And it's not, I'm terrified about this, but it may not be too long until it becomes an anti-Semitic trope, an anti-Semitic basis. So when we daven, we just don't daven that we Hashem should prevent Deborah, but he should also. So with Kenan, the mock of Kenan led to an economic shutdown. Basically, agriculture shuts down, construction shuts down, people can't move, can't walk, and everything really grinds to a halt, and the entire Egyptian society is thrown into bedlam and into dysfunction. So please keep in mind when you daven, when you say your brachos, we're davening for a full range, kalei dever, plague, cherev, violence, kalei dever, cherev, v'rav, economy, ushvi, violence between states, umashchis. So we really have a lot to daven for, in addition to, I don't say beyond, but in addition to the medical crisis. I mentioned before the fact that the Torah, this is the third issue, transitions between kinim, which is plural, and kinam, which is singular. Kinim and kinam. Most often it's referred to as kinim, but Chazal say that there were many, many different strains, again, of kinim or of rodents, or not clear how small they were, how large, it's probably a combination of both. If I'm not mistaken, one version in the Medrash says there were 14 kinim, one says there were 24. But it's clear that they weren't just dealing with volume, they were dealing with diversity and different strains, and presumably they got the fumigators, they got the traps, and they were able to overcome, because we all can overcome lice and rodents, because it's poison and it's deterrents. They were able to overcome some of the strains. But the mass of strains, and the we would call them mutations, but was just overwhelming. That's also something I think we're facing. I mean, I wrote an article, I forget where, I think it's going to be published this week in some of the syndicate magazines, about how we're not facing an epidemic that we can't crack. We know exactly what it is. We can reduce it to its DNA, to its RNA, actually. We can deal with it. We can handle. We can, Chaim's there. Hey, Chaim, how are you? We can handle it. We can provide care. What's really overwhelming us is the numbers of patients, the level of infection, the duration of the illness. This is where humanity is reaching its upper limits because we just can't deal with the masses and the volume. It's very different. I call that not Magadlu Masef, actually, not that we don't know it, but Marabu Masef, which is too much for us. But it's also that it's really evolving, and you're starting to see that younger people are being afflicted with it and there are different strains. Scientists are really tracing this virus very carefully, and they're noticing evolutions and mutations. And sometimes when we're dealing with one enemy, a little bit easier facing that one. Dom was one issue, one phenomenon. The blood turned into water. They could crack the chemical transformation, the chemical change. They could reverse it. The Tzfardea was one type of, you've got numbers and mutations and strains, and that creates a level of difficulty, which I think we're facing now as well. Finally, there's one medrash. It's more of a sidebar, but it's an important thing. I'm just thinking about it myself, and I know there's some people in South Africa listening, so I'm sure I have even deeper resonance for you. It says the Egyptians were punished through the dirt, the Afar Haaretz, because they had relegated the Jews, not just to construction, which is a fair, honest day job, or to agriculture and go, basically reduce them to street sweepers, to cleaners. They're cleaning up the dirt, cleaning up the palaces, cleaning up the marble palaces. And Shem wanted to reverse that and create a dusty, dirty environment. I think there's something here about reducing human beings to menial labor and Chazal have a little twist in it. The men were doing the women's job, the women doing the men's job. Basically, they weren't working in honest livings. They weren't going out and planting and building and doctors and lawyers. And I'm thinking a lot about what prompted the coronavirus. And I'm not thinking just in terms of a year or two or a month. I'm thinking about 70-year swaths and since World War II, and what is democracy and a free market economy that has enriched so much of us. And it's built into humanity that for people to become wealthy, others have to become less wealthy. You have to develop what we call a service industry, where we hire out our labor to people who are very, very needy so that we can have a more comfortable survival. And people that live in, and people that take care of our children, people that perform our basic menial labors, It's only, in truth, throughout history, it's the Achashverosh taxed all the villagers. Achashverosh is a heavy taxer because he had to find resources to support his endless partying. So Chazal say Achashverosh is called Achashverosh, called Nasim Rashim B'Yamim. Everyone got poor. They lived through. The only time he released the taxes and relieved the taxes is when he nominated or appointed Esther, and she brought some tax relief. Needed, much needed tax relief. So it is interesting to think about how part of the particular punishment was because somehow, this Medrash connotes, that the Jews have been working in the fields or even working in construction, aside from all the persecution and the murder, it's just been put to labor, and that's one thing. But to just create a service economy just for indulgences and comfort, and if it becomes too excessive, that's something for human beings to think about. Where do we draw the line? Obviously, we're not going to become our own plumbers and our own electricians. We have to create services, but where do you draw the line between, and how deep is the service economy? So that's just something to think about. I don't have real hardcore answers, but these are four overlaps between Kinim and between the coronavirus. Number one, the attention to hygiene. Number two, the economic shutdown as a secondary product or spin-off, domino effect from Kinim. Number three, the fact that they were dealing with different strains, which made it difficult. And number four, creating a service economy of street cleaners and chimney cleaners and the revenge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay. Sounds like a safe group, so I'll say good night to everyone. I know everyone's name here. So.
Thanks, Rav. Thank you very much.
Everyone, stay safe, everyone. Laila Tov. Nice to see you, Chaim. I don't see you, but nice to hear your voice.
See you, Laila. Always great to see you and to learn from you.
Okay. Laila Tov. I'm going to go shopping now. Rami Levy, the supermarket, only takes 10 people at a time, but they're open until 12. So hopefully the lines won't be too long. Put on my gloves and my mask.